The views expressed on The More Show are not necessarily the views of Radio Cardiff or its affiliates.
Hello, I'm Kevin Moore and you're now listening to The More Show. For the next hour, I'll cover subjects of an alternative variety that most shows do not touch. On today's show, I'm joined with William Schaefer to discuss his work into past life regression. So stay tuned, enjoy, and I'll be right back.
Mr. Show or a guest? Want to know more about The More Show and upcoming guests? Then log on to www.themoreshow.co.uk. The views expressed on The More Show are not necessarily the views of Radio Cardiff or its affiliates. Radio Cardiff presents The More Show on 98.7 FM and online at radiocardiff.org.
Welcome back to the show. I'm about to be joined with our guest, William Schaefer. Just a bit of background on William. He has dedicated his time through his unique gift of being able to tune into people's higher selves and provide past life readings. William has given past life readings to well over 1,000 people and co-authored the book Illuminating Physical Experiences. William also specializes in dream work and is currently based in Wales. William, welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure.
William, just explain a little bit about your book to begin with.
Okay, the book is called Illuminating Physical Experience, which is a rather weird title, but there you go. Although it's got a strange title, the book is very practical, down-to-earth, trying to illustrate how everything in the body, all the parts of the body, all the diseases in the body, have a deeper spiritual meaning and symbolic lessons.
Okay.
My particular philosophy is that we choose and create every moment of our existence. We are not the victims of some separate external God. God is within us. That is the reality of who we really are. And our personalities and our bodies are just a projection into this dimension of reality to learn, to act out our lessons, to heal, to expand as spiritual beings.
Okay.
So this book shows the deeper symbols, the deeper meanings behind all the parts of the body, all the diseases, so that you understand why things are going on in your body as they are. It's not enough to say, well, you know, I have cancer because of a virus, because of the genes in my body. We're very good at describing how we get what we get, but this does not answer why we get what we get. Because if it were true that you get cancer because of a virus or genes,
yes,
every single one of us would have cancer all the time. We all have cancer cells in us, every one of us. But what causes a manifestation of some illness or disease or malfunction in the body is a deeper emotional, spiritual issue. And the body communicates symbolically. All of life communicates symbolically. Our dreams are symbols. Our external life is symbolic. The body is symbolic. It is a constant language that we need to recognize and develop within ourselves so that we understand how and why we are choosing and creating everything in every moment in our lives, whether we like it or not, whether we're conscious of it or not.
Yes.
And in grasping that deeper awareness and understanding of ourselves, we can take a greater conscious awareness, responsibility, and control of our lives so that we're not merely reacting to life and acting and feeling like victims, but we rather see ourselves as the master creators of our own lives and more consciously choose what we genuinely desire and need for ourselves. And to see the deeper lessons, the emotional issues that are manifesting in the body in whatever disease or problem there is. Because in learning the lesson, in accepting and taking responsibility for that lesson, you can then create genuine healing and growth for yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and move yourself in the direction that you really want in your life. So this book is explaining all the symbols in the body and all the symbols in the external life, because our family, our jobs, our relationships, they are also mirrors symbolically reflecting back to us the same issues that are going on in our bodies and going on in our dreams. And this book just tries to tie all the levels together and illustrate how this symbolic mirroring is taking place so that we can take a more conscious control and responsibility for that.
So is that sort of looking to find balance in one's life?
Certainly balance, but also growth, direction, clarity, and a greater conscious responsibility for ourselves.
Sure.
Balance is a part of it, but it's not the whole picture. And we have the tendency to have a misperception of balance, because most people think balance is the absence of problems. And that's not necessarily balance. Balance isn't being rid of anything. It's not being controlled by anything. It's not having any aspect out of proportion. But it's not necessarily being rid of anything. And imbalance and disharmony are important elements of balance, because that's where the growth, that's where the development and the healing and the evolution take place.
Sure. I mean, you mentioned in the book as well that, you know, a lot of these problems stem from what you call past lives.
Yes. For me, my truth is past lives. And I work a great deal with that. People come to me for readings to see the patterns of behavior in past lives.
Sure.
I work a lot with dreams where a lot of past life information can come in there. I do not believe that you're here once and that's it. I believe that it's a continuum until we have done the complete package deal of all the issues and lessons and growth that we need to do. And one life continues into the next, and all lifetimes are affecting, influencing, supporting, and guiding all lifetimes at once.
Right.
And working with life, past lifetimes is another element, if that is truth to you, in finding this balance and in finding the direction and the growth and the lessons that need to be dealt with.
Sure. I mean, when did you sort of first start getting into past life regression?
I've had what for me is past life memory since I was 3 or 4 years old. It's always been there. And I've worked with it for so many lifetimes. It's just an integral part of me. But if we just talk about this lifetime,
sure.
I more formally started working with it in my mid-20s, which is, like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, was it a voice? Was it vision that came to you? Was it?
From the very beginning, it was just there. It was just awareness. When I was 4 years old, for example,
yes.
One of my earliest memories is I just knew I was my own great-grandfather in my last life, my mother's father.
Really?
I just knew. And my grandmother would be telling me stories about her, her childhood and what she learned from her father. Now, I would be sitting there 4 years old listening to her thinking, why is she telling me all this when I'm the one that taught her? And then I thought, oh, well, at least it shows me that she listened. I mean, this is the way I was thinking,
right.
Four years old.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's always been a part of me. It's just always been there. As I progress through the years, sometimes it's a voice. When I do readings for other people, it's a voice dictating to me the information that I need to give to them. But I also will sometimes see images with it, and I will sometimes have what for me is past life memory in dreams. So it's a combination of dictation and images, and just a very, very deep intuitive feeling.
So is this a case of you putting them under hypnosis? Or?
There's no hypnosis whatsoever.
Okay.
And I do not go into a trance at all. I did that lifetimes ago, done that, don't need to do that anymore.
Okay.
I simply, when someone comes to me for a reading, I ask them what issues they want clarity on. There has to be a genuine need. Some people are at a crossroads in their life, feeling very stuck, recognizing there's some pattern of behavior repeating that's very destructive, that is not supportive to them, or there's some crisis physically in the body. And then I will listen to their higher self. Their higher self talks to my higher self. And my higher self tells me what to tell them, what they need to know to understand why things are the way they are in their lives, what the lesson is, why they are resistant to it, and they're given suggestions on what to do to help them work with the issues. Our reading does not tell the future.
No.
Our reading does not tell them what to do. It just explains why things are the way they are, so that in that clarity, they make the choice in what they're willing to do with it.
For the listeners out there, I mean, what would you class, how would you define a soul?
I did not say I connect with their soul. I connect with their higher self. Now, 99.9% of people on this planet don't understand the difference between spirit and soul. They are two different things. Well,
okay.
It's all one, but it's slightly different. We are spirit. We are all spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
Soul is a spirit projected into physical incarnate form. Each lifetime you live is a soul experience. So you are a spiritual being with many soul experiences.
Yes.
I always use the example of a pearl necklace. Each pearl is a lifetime. Each pearl is a soul experience. The string connecting all the pearls and making it one necklace is the spirit. You are that spiritual string with many pearls of soul experiences.
Okay.
So each time you incarnate, that's a soul experience. You are one spirit with many soul personalities. Soul is spirit in incarnate form. Souls don't reincarnate. Spirit does.
You know, that's a very fantastic way you've put that. That's a very easy to sort of comprehend way.
Well, see, and this is where people get confused, like when they go to people who channel the dead. And, you know, someone will have their dead parents giving them messages.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will say, well, but if they've reincarnated, how can they do that? The spirit reincarnates, but that soul memory remains intact.
Okay.
Every soul experience remains a unique, individualized memory. Some of our own past lives are our own spirit guides, for example.
Right.
So each soul experience remains in that individuality, consciousness, and memory. So you have many, many, many soul experiences that maintain their personality and their memory, and we can tap into them anytime. And one soul experience can be guiding many of your other soul experiences simultaneously. And your higher self, your pure spiritual being,
yes,
is the string that ties it all together and keeps it as one ultimate unity.
So this is why we say past lives can affect your current incarnation.
Because they do.
Okay.
Plus, there's the concept that linear time is simply an illusion of this dimension. Outside of this third dimension, there's no such thing as linear time. That's simply an illusionary tool for us to experience and learn and heal and grow. So in reality, it's not so much reincarnation as simulcarnation, because in actuality, all your lifetimes are happening now.
Well, that's a big one to get around your head, one. That's a big one to get around.
So therefore, all lifetimes are affecting and guiding and teaching all lifetimes at once. But we experience it linearly.
Okay. Well, what do you think about people that offer progression rather than regression, as in future lives?
Well, here again, if all time is now, past, present, and future are all now.
Okay.
We must be careful with regression or progression. You got to remain very anchored in this present moment. And it's, you know, you have to be very careful that you don't get carried away going into the past or into the future, because then you're not here.
Yes.
And it's also important to realize that there's also probable futures, because we have so many choices to make in our lives. Each choice has more than one possibility, and each possibility creates its own possible future. And people who are prophets or people who do progressions, sometimes you're connecting into a probable future. But depending on the decisions we make in this here and now,
yes,
you know, you don't know in this here and now which probable course you're going to go off into. Okay. And all these possibilities are coexisting at once. So people who want to do progressions, I would say to them, be careful this isn't avoidance or escape from the here now, or laziness to try to get answers to make it easier now, because that won't work. It'll cause the opposite.
Okay.
You know, information from other lifetimes can be very helpful in seeing patterns and helping us get clarity, so long as our feet are very anchored in the here and now. We have to be very practical in this body, in this moment.
Okay.
And so long as you do that, then you take the information from anywhere and use it as you need to.
So in your book, you use the word Akashic Records. I mean, what would you, what's that, what is that?
Akashic is a Sanskrit word that means total sum.
Okay.
And your Akashic record is the total sum of all your lifetime experiences.
Okay.
It is an energetic vibration that emanates in the DNA in every cell of your body. So when people say, I'm the way I am because of my genes, in one way that's true, only in that your Akashic record is in your genes. But you're not the victim of your genes. You choose and create every lifetime, and you choose which family line you're going to be born into, because the genetic code matches your vibrating Akashic record. You choose a family that's going to provide the mirroring to reflect your issues. So you're not the way you are because of your genes. You choose and create your genes because that is the mirror, the projection of your Akashic record.
Okay, okay. So we're talking a lot about mirroring there. I mean, okay, we use the word soul. What is the soul looking for then?
Well, that depends on the consciousness of the soul.
Yeah.
But ultimately, hopefully, we're looking to be our true selves, however we determine that to be, as fully, completely, as honestly as possible. We want to recognize whatever patterns of behavior are destructive and unsupportive to us. Recognize how and why we created and got caught in those behavioral patterns.
Sure.
And make different choices.
Sure.
So we want to grow. We want to heal. We want to expand to be more than the limitations that we projected ourselves into.
So how comes for some people it just feels like they just keep making the same mistakes?
Because that's what they want to do.
Right.
Unfortunately, the vast majority of humanity is very, very lazy. And laziness is a symptom of fear, and especially denial of fear. And most humans don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to take ownership.
No.
They want someone to do it for them. This is why religion is so popular. Religion has absolutely nothing to do with spirituality. In fact, religion is anti-spiritual, because religion tells you what to believe, what not to believe, what to do, what not to do. You're not a self-responsible individual. Spirituality is taking full ownership and responsibility for yourself. Religion, you try to escape yourself by separating and externalizing everything. God is outside of you, a Messiah is outside of you, a devil's outside of you. Spirituality tells you our physical world is a mirror. That's its purpose. A mirror reflects. That's its job. Nothing in life proves or validates anything. A mirror only reflects. If you look into a mirror and say, I'm fat and ugly, the mm-hmm. mirror is not validating that. It's just reflecting it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of life is to reflect back to us what we're projecting onto it, so that hopefully we take ownership and see what we're projecting. Is it what we truly desire? Is it how we truly see who we are? Is it truly what we want to be or not? If not, why are we doing that? Where is it coming from? And then in that understanding, to make different choices.
So for people out there who do want to change, you can change now. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. But most people don't.
Okay.
Most people just want to be saved. They say they want to grow. They say they want to heal. And on some levels, they even think they mean it. But in actuality, most humans don't. They are so afraid to be powerful. They're so afraid to be their true selves that they choose religions and societies and families to use as the excuse to feel like a victim and wait for somebody else to die for them and suffer for them and save them. And life is ultimately teaching that doesn't work. And so long as that's what you want, then you are going to keep perpetuating that experience until you get so tired of it, you're ready to choose something else. And unfortunately, most humans aren't at that point yet.
What about the mundane person, sort of Joe Average, who just feels, you know, my life's sort of going okay, but I wish there was something more meaningful to it. What would you say to them?
That feeling of there is something else. They have to be willing to really put some energy into that.
Yeah.
Again, laziness comes out of fear.
Yeah.
And especially the denial of fear. Most people don't even want to own that they're afraid. Religion is built on fear. That's its foundation.
Yes.
Spirituality is built on acceptance and awareness and ownership. So to the average Joe, it's, you know, when you start feeling uncomfortable that this isn't enough, then hope begins. There's a saying, there's a newspaper in America that its masthead is, there's no hope for the satisfied man. So once you start not feeling satisfied with the status quo, then hope sets in.
Okay.
And you have to really, really desire deeply enough to want to pursue that there's something more. And once you really put energy into that, it starts to create its own results. If you really desire something passionately enough, you begin to magnetize it to you.
So are you saying that you should, in life, you should always go for that which is passionately in your heart to do?
That's my suggestion. That's what I tell people.
Yeah.
If you're not doing something that you passionately want to do, then you're in a state of self-sabotage. And feeling and acting like a victim is a false sense of security to most people.
So the people who turn around and say, well, hang on, it's a job, you know, it pays the bills, I've got a family to support, but yet I don't really enjoy my job, but I don't have a choice.
Yeah, that's the typical victim consciousness.
Yeah.
We choose and create every moment of our existence, whether we like it or not. And most of us at some point choose to believe that because it's an avoidance, it's a safety net, it's a defense mechanism. And so long as you're willing to believe that, you perpetuate your own limitation. You cannot be open to opportunities until you're willing to not need to believe, I have no other choices. We live in a universe that there's always other choices, but you have to really desire it enough. And most people are afraid. They're afraid. They don't want to dare to take the risk. And then they use family and, you know, children and this and that and the other as the excuse.
Okay.
And you can hold on to that as long as you want. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, it's going to just gnaw and gnaw away at you until finally it eats such a hole in you that you start to feel so horrendous that you're going to have to reach a point where you'll be willing to believe and look for something else.
Okay.
And sometimes that's what it takes in order to begin change in people.
So when, for example, if something, some big change was to happen in someone's life, be it the loss of a job, the loss of a house, for death in the family, then these changes are there to shake us up to point us in a new direction.
It's to provoke stagnation. And, I mean, it's a real challenge because when you're in the middle of a crisis,
yes,
you know, you've got a disease, a relationship has ended, someone has close to you has died, you know, your job's ended, your house is burned down, or what, you know, you've lost everything in a flood.
Yes.
It's very difficult because you have to be in the experience, and you have to allow yourself to be in that experience. But at some point, before we reach that point, if we're willing to work with ourselves and say, look, this life we're living, it's just a movie. It's just a symbolic image being projected.
Okay.
It's all symbolic of something else. If we're willing to work with that, then when the crisis comes, even when we're in the middle of the crisis, that penny can drop in our consciousness and, whoa, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. It's not just this. You don't want to deny what you need to feel in the moment of any experience.
Okay.
But we can also train ourselves in preparation that life is always something else. And we can set in ourselves a kind of program, if you will, that we can realize in the midst of whatever drama we're going through, wait, this is happening for a reason.
Yes,
this is an opportunity for something else. I don't, you know, if people are familiar with Course in Miracles, which is a spiritual study.
Sure.
One of the lessons in Course in Miracles is, I'm never upset for the reason I think.
Okay, well, what we'll do, we'll leave it just for there. We're going to take a break just quickly, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
To connect with the show, email kevin@themoreshow.co.uk. Listening to The Moore Show. And here's your host, Kevin Moore.
Okay, so welcome back to the show, William.
Yep.
Glad you've been here with us. Just picking up from one of the last sort of questions where we left off. I was going to talk to you about suicide bombers and what your thoughts are on them.
Well, okay. I mean, first of all, you know, on one level, these are individuals who are extremely trapped in a very limited belief system.
Okay.
They are trained to feel and act like victims. Religious fanatics of any religion fall into this trap of us against them. You know, they are instilled with fear because that's how you control people. Governments and religions and businesses, they control through fear.
Yes.
And when you've got someone controlled by fear, you know, logic goes out the window. And they are acting, you know, these are beings that have chosen this experience because they are so trapped in their fear. And they have probably become so self-destructive in their behavior in their other lifetimes leading up to this one that it sort of spills over and their self-destructive tendencies become projected into external destruction.
Okay.
And when you are really, really trapped in believing that you are a victim, someone outside of you is at fault, and you can only be saved through this belief system, when you're really trapped in that, you can pretty much, you know, do anything. And this extreme behavior is an experience for these people to experience the consequences of their choices. Now, simultaneously, on another level, the universe is using these individuals as a mirror to the rest of the world. And suicide bombers are certainly a mirror to the self-destructiveness that exists within all of us.
Okay.
And they are certainly mirrors of how we become trapped and how we become controlled by whatever thought forms and belief systems and external systems we give away our power to. Because most humans don't want to be who they really are, they choose to be part of a belief system that says God is separate and outside of you. And you're not, you know, you're not as good, you're not as powerful, you can't do it on your own. And when you believe in that, this leads to very, very painful, harmful, destructive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And any extremists, suicide bombers and fundamentalists are all mirrors of what is the fundamentalism any of us are holding on to inside of ourselves. What expectations and beliefs and roles are we buying into and holding on to that is destroying us in one way or another? So the suicide bombers are certainly one way the universe is reflecting back to us our own self-destructive pattern. But these souls choose to be the bombers.
Yes.
Because they have reached such a severe extremity of their own self-destructiveness because of their own self-fears and self-limitations.
Okay.
And who knows? Some of these bombers could even be elevated masters simply playing a role because of what it needs to provoke in all the rest of us. You never know which it can be, either one.
And when you say elevated masters?
A spiritual being who has achieved such a level of self-awareness and self-ownership, who has mastered the limiting, destructive behavioral patterns to such a point that they actually don't require the reincarnational experience.
Okay.
But will sometimes choose to act out a role just for what it can illustrate and provoke in other people.
Okay.
So when you see a drunk in the gutter, you don't know if it's really a soul who has reached such a level of self-destructiveness, or if it's a spirit master just testing to see, do you recognize the mirror? How are you going to react or respond to this situation? You never know.
Amazing.
Which it is.
Okay. Well, what about the opposite end then, where the starving in masses?
Now, here again, you know, we are all cutting ourselves off from ourselves. And when we choose to believe limitations, when we choose to give away our inner creative power to a guru, a messiah, a government, a society, whatever, when you choose to do that, it can be very, very self-destructive. And so you will also have souls who have achieved such a level of awareness of self-ownership and self-healing that they try to be illustrating other choices, other opportunities. We need to be provoked by having our asses kicked, and sometimes we need to be provoked in very loving, supportive, positive ways. And we kind of need a combination of the two, because we're all so stubborn. We're all so resistant. We are all stuck in our denials one way or another. And the universe needs lots and lots of choices in order to get the stagnation moving again. And sometimes it's that combination of the kick in the butt and the light at the end of the tunnel. We need different experiences as an opportunity to shake us up.
So do all souls go to the same place?
What are we talking about? What do you mean by place?
Well, I mean, are we all checking in at the same destination? I mean, if someone's, you know, committed an atrocity compared to someone who's lived a fairly normal life...
Okay, everything that happens in life, this is just a symbolic movie. Nothing that happens here is really happening to us. It just looks like it and feels like it, because we have to experience and feel it fully in order to learn and grow and evolve. But this third dimensional existence, it's a karmic remedial school, if you will.
Okay.
It's a learning movie. The universe doesn't care what happens. Karma has nothing to do with what happens. Karma and spiritual growth are all about why. The lessons in the why, not the what. The universe doesn't look at what's happening. That's just a projected movie happening at this level of existence. It is why we do what we do. It is what we feel within. This is the reality. This is the truth and the growth.
Okay, so it's more...
All of us have done everything in all our lifetimes. You know, we've done wonderful things, we've done horrendous things. And everything we've done is a projection of something we need to recognize and own within ourselves. And we need to learn to take that full awareness and responsibility for ourselves. And so we go through whatever experience we need to go through in order to achieve that. You know, heaven and hell are not physical places.
No.
They are states of
okay.
consciousness. Afterlife is it's a state of consciousness. It's not a place. There's nothing so stagnant as that. We are in a continuous stage of expansion. And the more we learn, the more we grow, the more we expand. There is no final destination. We just become our truer selves more and more and more. We evolve into other levels of existence and creative opportunities. And we carry within our spiritual being all our past life experience. Every personality you have ever lived retains that unique individuality and memory within the whole, within yourself. And it all adds up to this evolution of yourself. So there is no place, there is no final destination. It is a constant, eternal evolving into other realms of existence and possibilities.
So when people say they can see the white light, or they've been to a place of white light, What are they referring to, do you think? Is that just a...
Now, to answer that question, the most important movie, the most important spiritual movie ever made is What Dreams May Come.
Okay.
It came out in the mid-90s with Robin Williams. This movie answers your question. And this movie was made to answer that question. You experience, you create according to what you choose to be your truth. And if you, everyone should see this movie. You should buy the DVD because you need to see it 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Watching it once or twice, it's not enough. But the whole point of What Dreams May Come is that reality is whatever you make it, and reality is simply a mirror reflecting back to you. You see according to what you choose to believe and feel as your truth. So if someone has a near-death experience and they say they see Jesus, this is not a validation that Jesus is any kind of a Messiah. That's what they expected to see. That's what they see. If you believe Mickey Mouse is God, it's Mickey Mouse you're going to see. If you believe that certain actions will cause certain judgments and punishments, you choose and create that.
So what about the people who say that life's about learning unconditional love and projecting that towards others?
Yeah, that's fine, though most people haven't got a clue what that means. People tend to have such a mental, conceptual perception or airy-fairy romantic ideal of that. You know, what is unconditional love? What does it mean? I think at a human level, it's a ridiculous goal. At a spiritual level, to me, unconditional love, for me,
yes,
is total acceptance and ownership of myself, that I choose and create every moment of my life, and that everything is representing a deeper meaning and a deeper opportunity. And so unconditional love is accepting everything as that, and not just simply what's happening at face value. And unconditional love to me is allowing people their creative choice.
Okay, so allowing someone to be that person that they want to be and not trying to change them.
You're not needing to take responsibility to change them.
No.
There is nothing more pathetic than religious people needing other people to believe the way they do. This stems from a lack of belief. This comes from fear. If you were secure in your truth, you wouldn't need everybody to believe the way you do. And the more people talk about love, the less they feel it and really understand what it is.
Okay.
It's a state of being your true self and really accepting and owning. You choose and create everything. And that people need to choose and create their experience as they need it. We're here to heal ourselves. We're here to learn and grow according to our own inner truth. We're here to help one another, but that's not a purpose or a mission. We help one another by being who we are. It's a natural extension of being who you are, but it's not a mission. And we are not responsible for changing or saving anyone. We be ourselves as truly and honestly as we can. This helps other people, or it doesn't, as they choose.
What about if the actions of a partner is hurt, you know, actually hurting you, what they're doing, but yet you
then
don't...
you don't put up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at, why did I choose to be with this partner? Okay? What does this partner mirror to me? What do I think I love in this partner? What you know, you've got to see yourself in the relationship. What you love the most in another individual is what you most need to recognize and love in yourself. What you dislike or hate most in another individual is what you are most trying to deny and run away from yourself. And we choose, we magnetize people to us in relationships of one kind or another, and we mirror to one another our issues. And rather than just saying, this person does that, and he makes me do that, she makes me feel that, this is victim consciousness. It's just blame. It's self-avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
If we can recognize ourselves in one another, then we get why we magnetized each other to begin with. Then we take ownership of what is ours, and what is theirs. And if you're in a relationship that's very abusive, then you got to look at, why did I think I needed to be abused this way? How do I do this to myself? And once you recognize that and determine what you need to do with that, part of that determination may be, I no longer need to be with this person because this is not the mirror I want anymore.
Okay, so we all have the free will to, obviously, to choose and pick which way we want the movie to go.
We choose and create every moment of our lives, whether we are conscious of it or not, whether we believe it or not, whether we like it or not.
Okay. What about the people who would attack you for having these views?
I don't care.
No.
I don't need people to agree with me. I'm not a missionary. I don't believe in proselytizing.
No.
I don't need people to accept my beliefs, to validate my beliefs or my existence. If I am threatening or angering people, great. The British need to feel something. You know, let them react however they want.
Sure.
Their reactions are theirs, have nothing to do with me.
Okay.
I don't need their validation or approval. This is not a need of mine.
A couple of other questions here that I wanted to ask you as well, because these are in your book as well. Animals.
Yes.
Do you get people coming to you to want to sort of figure out where their pets have been with them before?
Yes, I also do readings for animals. And, you know, animals are really, they've really become stuck. Animals are our spiritual brothers and sisters. And they represent all the emotional issues. And animals are trying to teach us how to recognize and own our own emotions. And the animals that we are drawn to or repelled by are mirrors of the emotional issues that we need to work on, that we are most drawn to or are afraid of.
Okay.
And animals got very personally caught up in trying to help us. They became over-caretakers. And so, like, animals have diseases now they never had before because they took too much personal responsibility for us, as we sometimes tend to do in our relationships. I have been working with animals for many years.
And do most pets, do they stay in the same group of families, or do they?
Some do, some don't. Animals will incarnate as different animals.
Yeah.
Some animals evolve into human experience, although I'm of the personal experience that being a human is not necessarily evolutionary, but anyway, I tell animals, don't do it. But sometimes when animals want to evolve into human spirit, they will live many lifetimes as pets to have closer contact with humans, you know, to begin that process.
Okay.
Some animals choose to remain in the same species. Whales and dolphins and porpoises tend to be that and nothing else.
Yeah.
They're kind of in a different Akasha group. Cats very rarely incarnate as anything else. Cats think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread.
You know, I can believe
they
that.
They don't think they're God. They know it. They're kind of the feline kingdom is sort of, they're kind of separate. And they tend to stay within that. But the other animals tend to mix and kind of experience the whole animal kingdom.
So you've never regressed anyone who had a past life as an animal?
Actually, I have. On a couple of occasions. Some animals do decide to enter the human consciousness. Not all, but some do. But you don't go back and forth. Evolution is a one-way street.
I see. What's one of the most sort of famous regressions that you've done? The one's one of the most memorable. I mean, would you be able to name one or two? Or, I mean, is there any ones where you've been to other planets? I mean, is there?
Yeah, but I've had many people where we go into lifetimes on other planets. All of us are from other planets. Nobody started here.
Really?
Yeah, we're all from somewhere else.
I see.
So that comes up quite a bit, actually. I do find patterns. People will come to me. There'll be patterns. Like there'll be 10, 15 people in a period of 6 months where it's like the same theme repeating again and again.
Okay.
I kind of get this kind of groupings going on.
That's quite strange.
Yeah, well, not really. Not really, because usually people come to me because they've heard through somebody else.
Okay.
So people tend to reincarnate in groups because they're kind of working on the same patterns and have for many lifetimes. And also, everybody's reading is a reading for me. So I'll get these different themes depending on what themes I'm working on in myself, because everybody's reading is mirroring something to me too.
Oh, really?
So therefore, that's not surprising, because if I've got a lot of people coming with the same theme, it's also telling me that I better pay attention and take a look at that theme in me.
Have you found this gift that you've got to be a gift of a curse? I mean, if you don't use it, do you become ill at all? I mean, what?
No, but if I try to get too personally caught up in other people and how they react,
okay,
that could make me very ill. But no, I don't see it as a curse at all.
No.
But it tends to be very tiring when thousands and thousands of people,
yes,
are asking me the same question, coming from the same fear,
yeah,
and denial of the fear, yeah, and the resistance of the denial.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that's got to be a mirror to me too. Otherwise, it wouldn't be affecting me.
Well,
so,
okay, yeah, there's that way of looking at it. Yes,
yes,
of course.
So if I'm getting tired of it, then uh-oh, there's something I'm resisting in me I better look at.
Okay, okay. Going back just quickly to the question of the topic of life on other planets,
yeah,
or souls coming from other planets.
Yeah.
What's your views on? I mean, obviously, you've done all these regressions, and then some of them are going to other lives on other planets. What's,
yeah,
what's your feelings towards a life out there?
Well, I mean, you know, this is one big universe, and it's one of unlimited number of universes, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who thinks this is the only one place of life really needs to turn their brain on. We can't. Those of us who are here on Earth, we've come from many, many, many other planets and dimensions, and we'll go to many, many, many others after this. While Earth is now in this transitory period, Earth as a conscious living being is evolving into a higher vibration of consciousness, and that's what's provoking everything that's happening right now. We're all going through such dramatic stuff because of this planetary process. This is drawing a lot of other beings from other worlds and dimensions to kind of watch what's going on here. There are people from every planet and dimension here. I mean, Earth is really accelerating the energy of her consciousness. This is a major vibratory shift that we're going through, for about the next decade or so. And it's drawing in a lot of beings who want to observe, who want to learn, who want to participate. Some of them want to kind of screw up the works a little bit. You know, it attracts everybody at all levels.
Is that to do with this the global credit crunch? I mean, that's taking a big effect on our society now. I mean, there's...
Humans don't value their spiritual truth. Humans have become very stuck in only valuing the external. And the external is nothing but a symbolic mirror. So it's like trying to dress yourself in the morning in front of a mirror, and you're trying to put the clothes on the reflection in the mirror instead of on yourself. And humans have projected all this value on money and property and possessions and position, and it's all an avoidance of what they deny and reject within themselves. And Mother Earth now is quite tired of this. And so as she is accelerating her energy vibration, it's causing all of us to go within. We all have to go into a much deeper internal process. And we all have to start working with our lives is just this external mirror. The reality is inside of you only.
Mm-hmm.
So because people don't value themselves, because they've become so addicted to money and possessions and whatever,
yeah,
therefore, the world economy has to go down the toilet. Everything we have overcompensated externally has got to go down the toilet, because that's the only way to get humans to wake up. healing can only be achieved through emotional processing. It's not enough to take care of the physical symptoms. You have to do that.
Yes.
But to do just the physical symptoms is like turning off a fire alarm without putting out the fire.
Right. Okay.
And people are not dealing with the emotional issues, and especially in the United Kingdom, the British are the most emotionally constipated beings on the planet. Emotions is a dirty word in the UK. And emotions are the foundation of everything. This is bad news to the British. So there has to be a complete breakdown of every social structure. All their churches are going to break down, the governments, the world economy, the NHS. Everything has to break down because we're too addictively dependent on everything. And we're not focusing on ourselves.
And
this is going to force people to go within. And you either have to start feeling and owning who you are within and then utilize the external as a projection of that. Or else you're going to go down the toilet with all the forms. But the mirror is shattering. And if people can't let go of their external addictions, then they're going to have the most incredible implosive crisis of their lives, which is not a bad thing, except that it'll feel that way.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's whatever it takes to wake human consciousness up, and humans are incredibly stubborn.
I've just got back from the United States, and, you know, I've never quite known it as bad as it is over there right now. I mean,
as it needs to be.
As it needs to be, right. Okay.
And as it needs to be all over the world. People are too dependent on external validation, and a mirror doesn't validate anything. It just reflects what you're projecting.
So where's this leave it for 2012? Because there was a lot of talk, and we're having some future programs on this subject as well. What do you
well,
think?
I wouldn't be so addicted to the time. Yes, the Mayan calendar ends the end of 2012. Yeah, okay. But don't be addicted to that. You know, this final consciousness shift, it may come then, it may come before, it may come after. You can't be addicted to dates. Linear time is, you know, it's a tool, but that's all it is. But everything's going to break down externally to the extent it needs to force people to take responsibility within themselves and to start creating new lives that are not based on external validation.
Yeah.
We need to get back into, for example, bartering instead of money. We need to start valuing ourselves and our feelings and our truth rather than this imaginary piece of paper or amounts in the banks, which are not real.
When you get banks bailing out, well, governments bailing out banks for, you know, $700 billion at a time. I mean,
it's unreal.
It makes money not seem like money.
It's not. It's just an illusion.
Yeah.
But until people value themselves, everything that they project the value externally is going to fall apart until there's nothing left but themselves. And if they can't deal with that, then they go on to the next Akashic remedial school, whatever it takes.
Just one more thing. I'm going to sneak this in here real quickly. We spoke about dreams earlier on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there'll be people wanting to know about this. Is there anything you can tell us about the sort of dream work that you do carry out?
Well, I help people to discover their own dream language, their own dream symbolism. The absolute worst thing you could ever do is get a book on dreams. Unless it's a book written by me, that would be something else.
We'll put that later on.
But working with a dream book is the worst thing you could do because dreams come from your own higher self. And the point is to discover your own symbolic language. And if you are dependent on a book saying or a course saying this means that and this means that, you're stuck. Because you have to learn to be completely trusting and reliant on your own self-creative symbols based on your own experiences. So I help people to discover their own dream language. I never tell a person what their dream means. I help them to find it themselves. I can offer suggestions what their dream would be if it were my dream.
Sure.
As kind of a foundation to work with. You can work with archetypes, you know, the archetypes that Jung wrote about. They're good as a foundation to work with, but they're not carved in stone.
No.
And so I help people to just recognize how and why they're creating the dreams they are, so that they can discover for themselves the messages they're giving themselves. And also, we do so many things at the dream level, because we have past life memory, we visit other realms of reality. There are many other things going on at the dream level rather than dreaming. So I try to explain these other things that are happening, how to differentiate between them, but to help people be their only source of determining what a dream means.
Is that why sometimes when we wake up from what we think's been a long sleep, we actually feel even more tired than what we went to bed at?
Because we're very busy. We're very busy with sleep. And also, if you're very resistant to the information in your dreams, you'll wake up feeling exhausted. And when you wake up having, you know, nightmares, or you can't remember what you're dreaming, you don't understand your dreams, these are all self-sabotage mechanisms. And when you keep that up, that'll exhaust you too.
There is an email that's just come in here, and I've just got to just ask this. I know I shouldn't be, because we're running out of time, but we're at the bottom of the hour. But it's asking, have you ever regressed anybody to Atlantis?
Oh, God. Thousands and thousands, of course.
Yeah.
Atlantis is a major theme that is still being played out today. Seven countries are carrying the majority of the unresolved Atlantean karma. The United States, the United Kingdom, Russia, Germany, France, Sweden, and Norway. They are the seven major countries of the unresolved Atlantean karma. And Atlantis was all about being too much in the head, too much mental, rejection of the emotional, rejection of the feminine energy, relying on the scientific and the technological, and not balancing it with the feelings and the creative and the intuition. So, I mean, Atlantean past life memories come up a lot, because it's still the Atlantean issues we're dealing with. And all this stem cell research and the cloning, genetic manipulation, this is all old Atlantean stuff.
Really, they're from your regressions that you've done, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were a quite advanced race by the sound of it.
Far more than we are today. But they were advanced without any emotional, spiritual integration or connection. Therefore, they brought about their own destruction. And here we are again.
Take two, yeah.
Same script. Different costume.
Okay. Can you get your book from Amazon? Is that right?
I think you can.
Yeah.
I think people have told me that you can.
Yeah.
They can get it from me, or I believe they can get it on Amazon. They can try. I think some people have said they've been able to.
We'll put your email address on the side if that's okay, so if anyone wants a reading. And with the reading, is it something they have to write in, or do they do it face-to-face?
They have a choice. They can either make an appointment to see me in person, and I'm in Llandrindod Wells in Powys.
Sure.
Which is like an hour and a half from Cardiff.
Yes, it is, yes.
Or they can do it through the post. And to do it through the post, you handwrite a letter listing your questions, and they enclose, you know, the check. It's £50 to have a reading, and they enclose a photo of themselves that I can tune into.
Okay.
And then I do the reading as channeled automatic writing and send it back to them. I do not do readings over the phone. I don't do it over the email.
Right. So either in person or by letter. Well, William, I just want to say thank you so much for giving us the time to come on the show. I know that there'll be people out there that's going to listen to this, and hopefully it'll be awakening something within them as well.
Well, that'll be great. Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you very much.
You too.
To find out more information on William Schaefer, just go to my website, which is themoreshow.co.uk, and look up William Schaefer under Past Guests. And don't forget you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest updates on the shows. And we also have a TV show which goes out every Friday at 6 p.m. on Sky 201 and Freesat 403. So until next time, thanks for listening.